Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I suppose you could be back to your wedding day. And you're about ready to start the big deal. You know, she's going to walk down the aisle, the guy's on the commitment side, and somebody pulls you aside. And he's an emissary from heaven, sent by God. And he hands you a little card, 3x5 card, and a pen. And he says, please outline for me a job description for this job you're about to sign up for, a married person. A job description, you know what a job description is? Does she know? Interpreter. Yeah, job description. You're about to take on a responsibility. Please explain to me what it is you're signing up for. And they're already, the organ's playing and the beautiful music and the ladies, the pretty ladies are already down at front. And they're, what right now? Yeah, come on, you're signing up for it. You're pretty serious about it. This is for the rest of your life, for crying out loud. What is it you're supposed to be doing? Well, if somebody would have done that to me in my life, I would have no idea what to say. I would be clueless. Because I don't think we normally think that way. And yet, how many of us, if you ever go apply for a job, that's one of the first things I want to see. You look up the job description and you look at it and say, okay, that's what you're looking for. And you say, okay, I think I'm really ready for it. I could really do a lot in this one. These four things and this one here, I need a little help on, but I'll work to get better at that. And yet for marriage, we just go sign up, not realizing going in. So I would like to unpack for you a biblical job description from the scriptures that would help us maybe see better what we're supposed to do. And we're going to work from Genesis chapter 1. And the first part of the job description is through marriage, we show people how to reflect God's image. God wants us to be reflections of his image in marriage. Reflections. Look at Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. And so he wants us to be a reflection of his image to the people around us. Now, if I was going to illustrate this, one of the best ways that I could think of would be like a mountain lake.
Say that again.
Okay, a mountain lake. In fact, letter A in your outline there, it says, God joined a man and woman together so that the couple would mirror his image. Now, you know what a mirror is, if you look in it and it tells you back. So let's say you were out in one of these beautiful areas here, and there's a beautiful mountain. There's a lake down at the base of it. And you look at the right time in the morning, and the mountain is perfectly reflected in the lake. So you get out your camera, and you take a picture of it. And you get that picture printed off. But when you get it back, you're not sure which side is up. It looks so perfectly mirrored. Well, that's what our marriages are supposed to be. That when people look at us, they see a mirror, a reflection of God. He says, let's make man and woman in our own image. But let's say just before you're about to take that picture, some kid's over there, and he sees what you're about to do, and he picks up a big rock, and he throws it into the middle of the lake. And now these ripples go off, and they distort that image. Well, that's more like what we're dealing with, isn't it? That's what we are, because we have sin in our life. And that sin has distorted God's image in us. And so that causes us trouble. And our selfishness and our selfish bents get the best of us. Let me give some examples from Darcy and I's life. Before Darcy and I got married, we thought, you know the word clones? You know what a clone is? We thought we were clones of each other. Clones. Identical. Because we loved the same things before we got married. We loved them. For instance, you got it? Okay. Before we got married, for instance, Darcy loved American football. You know, the kind with the helmets and the oblong ball? She loved it. Before we got married, loved it. She'd call me up, and professionals were playing on television that night. She said, you want to come over and watch the football game with me? Well, yeah, I want to watch the football game. I'd go over there, and she'd make some fun stuff to eat. And she'd sit beside me with her arm through mine and hold my hand and her feet up on the little, and we'd watch the entire game. This is great. We watched so much football, she figured out players' names, and so she knew all their names. She figured out their defenses and what they're in. She figured out that the numbers on their jersey could tell you what position they play. A lot of people don't know that, but that's how they tell them apart. The officials can look right at them and know what position they play. They look at their number. See, most men don't know that. Most women don't know that, and most men don't know that, unless you play it. If Darcy ever got up, she never walked between me and the television set. No, she wouldn't block my view. And she never turned on like a noisy vacuum cleaner during the two-minute warning at the end of the game. And I thought, this is a wonderful lady. I'm going to marry her. We're going to watch football the rest of our lives. This is going to be. Before we got married, Darcy used to make some of her own clothing. She would get the fabric and lay it out on the floor. And then she would buy these patterns, the little thin paper patterns for the dress or whatever she's making. And she'd lay it down with one. And you know what I used to enjoy doing for her? I would get the pin cushion, and I'd get down on my hands and knees, and I'd pin these things all down for her very carefully, get the scissors out very carefully, cut them out, and I'd stack them up for her on the table. And I used to enjoy doing that for her before we got married. And then we got married. And the football game came on. I said, hey, sit down and watch the game with me. Why? What do you mean, why? You love football. When did you get the impression I love football? Then she'd get out, she'd be working on a pattern. Hey, can you pin this down and cut it out for me? Well, I'm capable. But I'm not crazy about the idea. So, but I thought you enjoyed doing it. When did I give you that impression? Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Tim and Darcy Kimmel are so pathetic, they deceived each other to get each other to marry them. Now, we're not questioning the pathetic part, but we did not deceive each other before we got married. Before we got married, she liked football, I liked to help her cut junk out. And then we got married, and you know what happened to us? And this is very important. We changed. It happens all the time. I hear people say, you need to marry somebody you have a lot in common with to have a good marriage. And I disagree with that. I mean, if you can line that up, good for you, but I don't think it's critical that you marry somebody you have a lot in common with. And here's why. Because it doesn't matter who you married. That's not who you're married to 5 years later. And I'm not talking about divorce. I'm just talking about life. Life changes us. I mean, we move away from our families. That changes us. We maybe start making more money than we ever saw together. That changes. Or we do something foolish and lose more money than we ever lost. That changes. Go to the hospital, bring home children. They change your looks. For 20 years, they give you that startled look of a deer caught in the headlights of your car. Go bury one or more of your parents and you change. Not bury both of them. Bury one or both. It changes. And so what makes a great marriage that we have a lot in common? No. But that we're constantly adjusting to what life is turning us into. And that willingness to adjust is called grace. It's grace. It's a willingness to help each other in adjust. By the way, we're different in how we get ready to go out. We get dressed and go out. Because Darcy's so elegant and she looks so nice. But I've watched her. Sometimes she can't decide what to wear. And she'll put two or three outfits on the bed and a row of shoes in front of the mirror. And she holds a dress up in front of herself and stands behind shoes to try and figure out which one to wear. And then she'll go and get another outfit and do this. Then she can't decide what shoe. She'll put one color on and another color. And then she'll stand like one of those cranes out in the middle of the lake on one leg in the mirror trying to figure out what she's going to wear. And I just look at this, crazy. Meanwhile, I'm over in the hamper and I'm rifling through smelling shirts thinking, you know, this is not too bad. I can put on a sweater and I'm ready. You see, we're very different people. We need grace. So God joined a man and woman together so that as a couple we would mirror his image. And when we have grace, we do mirror it. If they see, even though we're very different people, even though we have self-interest and sin, God redeems us. And the more he shows up in our life, the more we look like we reflect his heart of mercy and grace. He called this union marriage. Our oneness reflects the character and unity of God. And think about the Trinity. The Trinity. The Trinity is always in unity with one another, right? The Father loves the Son. The Son loves the Spirit loves the so forth. And they submit to one another. Look at and then also couples who mirror God's image experience oneness between the reflect the oneness that Christ has, the love he has for the church. And so there's so much online. One of our job descriptions is to mirror his image. And the more we let him own our heart and reflect his heart, the better. Look, this is good number two. Through marriage, we show people how to mutually complete each other in companionship. Look at this. But for Adam, no suitor helper was found. Suitable helper was found. So what did God do to show Adam his need? He caused him to fall asleep, and while he was asleep, he took one of the man's ribs and closed the place, and he made a woman from the rib taken out of the man. He said, this is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, she shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. See, first he showed him his need by giving him a job. Name all the animals. So he's naming the animals, and they're coming by in pairs, aren't they? You keep seeing them coming by in pairs. And here's a ram, and here's a ewe, and here's a hen, and here's a drake, and here's a cow, here's a bull. He sees them coming, and then he realizes, wait a minute, I don't have anybody. I have no one. So he gave them a need, and then what's interesting is God created a void in Adam. He says, not even I'm going to fill. I want a person to fill it. I want a woman to fill this. And so he did this for us. So before Darcy and I, before I met Darcy, I never felt lonely. I was from a large family, 6 children in our family. And I, kind of a boisterous, fun kind of guy. I had lots of friends, played a lot of sports. I never felt lonely until I met her. And then I started to realize, I don't know whether I really want to go through life without her. If she's not in it, I'm going to feel something's missing. What is it? God brings us not so much somebody that we can live with as much as someone we can't live without. We need them. And so he shows us our need. And God designed marriage as the first system of interdependent relationships. I said interdependent, not codependent, not independent, interdependent. In other words, there's things we need each other for. And then there's things that that we still want to stay individuals. I think when marriage is when one becomes an extension of another one's ego, that's a bad thing. God wants us to be able to stay unique people and still need each other. And then oneness in marriage is possible when we consider our spouse before we consider ourselves. And this kind of addressing the point she made, consider our spouse before ourselves. I love this verse here, Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Think about this and how this is the opposite of these lenses here. Do nothing out of rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more important than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Do you know what I mean by garage sale? You have garage sales? My daughter and I had gone out on a breakfast date. She was a little girl, and we were going following signs of garage sales. And we came to one, and as we started down the driveway to this thing, somebody had taken chalk and written in big letters, getting divorced. Everything must go. And then there was an arrow pointed to one side that said, his stuff. And then another said, my stuff. So I knew who was running the garage sale. The wife was, right? And I went up there, and it was really sad to see, because, when I see this, my heart was breaking. And then right in the middle of her side was a beautiful framed picture from their wedding. She was selling their wedding portrait. And I picked it up, and I looked at the woman in this picture, and then I looked at the woman at the garage sale. And I thought, what happened between the moment this picture was taken and today, that wiped this beautiful smile off this lady's face. What happened? Well, we know what happened. We get selfish. We want our own way. Well, God says, no, 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 I gave you marriage to be about the other person. See, when we marry somebody, you say, I want them to fill my needs. No, we marry them to fill their needs. They say it's a 50-50 thing. No, it's not a 50-50 thing. It's 100. You give 100, whether they give anything. And who does that to God? That's how he loves us. We love him in return. And then through marriage, we show people how to multiply a godly legacy. And it's, you know, God bless them. And he said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. So marriage provides a divine context for having children. And that's why when people live together, they cohabitate. They do damage to those kids because there's no sense of commitment. They say, oh, I love security. Really? Get married then. Oh, we don't need to be. Then it's not secure. You want a way out. You're not serious about this love. And God gives us that. And oneness in marriage is necessary in order to multiply a godly legacy. Because child rearing is a team effort, and it's hard when a person has to do this by themselves. And also for children to appreciate their sexual identity, they must see a harmonious marriage modeled by their parents. I love the word harmonious. If any of you are musicians, harmony is a key part of music. But there are notes that somebody sang a note and somebody sang a sudden, they wouldn't harmonize. They would be discordant. And we can sing harmony in our love when we're all in harmony with Jesus Christ, and he's the one that's really singing through us, and he's the one setting our agenda. And their roles as future husband and wives, our children's roles as future husbands and wives, are best understood by seeing this harmonious thing. What you were talking about there, the more the parents show what marriage is supposed to look like, the better these kids have. And so one of the things on our job description is to multiply godly heritage. To let kids see what it's like. And then fourthly, marriage is a picture of Christ's love for his bride, the church. God can use a godly marriage in a fallen world to point others to his love. And the best way to see this happen is to allow God's grace to be the defining feature of your relationship. I don't know, for those of you who got married, I don't know, in engagement, somebody has to ask somebody to marry them, right? We call it popping the question in America. I don't know what that means. Is that right here? What do you call it here? Getting engaged. And usually they make that a big deal. And I don't know where you got engaged. I've seen them in, big jumbotrons at the football games. I've seen them in quiet corners of restaurants. But I can tell you one place that's probably a lousy place to ask somebody to marry you. And that's a public execution. Just doesn't seem like the right backdrop to ask somebody to marry you. But that's exactly where God went to. That's exactly where Jesus went to a public execution to ask you to marry him. He didn't have a beautiful gold ring and a diamond. They had cruel spikes. He didn't get down on one knee. They hung him up on a cross. He didn't have friends ready to celebrate. He had a bunch of mean-spirited people ready to mock him. But it was there, in that moment, where he said, I love you, and I want to pay the dowry for my relationship with you. And so, everything, the determining factor in our marriage is not even each other. It's the Lord and what we let him be in our life. Darcy and I, we had a girl, boy, girl, boy. And when the girls were little, they had real long hair. And Darcy would always fix their hair so nice. And I never paid attention to what she would do. Now it looks so nice. But every once in a while, Darcy would have to go on a trip. And like she was off visiting her mother one time for a couple weeks. And I had to get the girls ready for things, and like church. And I didn't know what I was doing. And I tried, but apparently it looked pretty bad. And one of her girlfriends said, you won't believe what he did to their hair, and so forth. So she said, tonight after we put the kids to bed, I want to teach you to do something. And I got kind of nervous because the thought of me messing with women's hair is just very frightening. But anyway, we put the kids to bed, and I built a fire in the fireplace, and we had some music on the stereo. And she came out with a brush, and she said, I'm going to teach you how to French braid hair. I'm going to teach how to French braid hair. You girls, translate French braid for her. Okay. So, and she sat down kind of cross-legged on the floor, and I'm sitting on the couch, and I brushed out her hair, and following her instructions, I started to French braid her hair. And I got it down there a little bit, and then I brushed it out, and I just did it over again. And we're looking at the fire, we're talking with each other, we're listening to the music. And then a song came on, a song that is actually a secular song, but it always reminded me of Jesus and fellowship with him. And I was listening to that song, and I was braiding her hair, and then something hit me. A thought hit me. One of these kind of aha moments. I was looking at her hair, and you know, when you look at a woman's braided hair down the back of her head, it looks like two strands of hair going over each other, kind of like this. Looks like two. I was holding three in my hand. And I was weaving them together to look like two that made one. And I thought, that's what Christian marriage is. You take Jesus' love, his grace, his mercy, and you're weaving that into your love. The two of you. You have three there. You have Jesus and the two of you, and you weave it in, and the two of you are woven together. Three are made two to look like one, and that's Christian marriage. And so, what we need to be, people, is we can never leave Jesus out of the brain of our love. And when he's there, it looks beautiful. All right, let's spend some time here. Any feedback, observations, maybe from your own life? Any questions about anything? In the United States, I think we're more preoccupied with weddings than we are with the marriage that happens afterwards. We want to have a great wedding, but nobody wants to put forethought into the marriage. Let me give you kind of a funny story about this. This couple was getting married in the Phoenix area, and they wanted to get married on a golf course. You know, they have a lot of golf courses out there, and they make nice backdrops for a wedding. But they were not interested in all the premarital counseling in the church. They went through it because they had to, but they really weren't interested. And they just kind of did it because they had to. And when you try to talk to them about spiritual things, they just weren't. They wanted to make a real statement at their wedding. And they had the budget to do it. They were both kind of well-off people. And so they really put on a spectacular wedding. And they wanted a wedding that no one would ever forget. Well, I don't know whose idea, but they found out this guy had these two doves, and they'd be in cages up at the front, and at a certain point, they each went to reach in and get their dove, and they hold them up, and these doves would fly up kind of like this, you know, together, and then they kind of go over the horizon, and whoever owns them, he's somehow calling them or something, they fly to the guy, and then he'd rent them out to somebody else. Sounds pretty, and then the idea was, their new love is rising up and together, So the time came for them to do this. They got their little doves, and they let them off. When they're flying, Arizona has a lot of hawks. And there was a hawk way, way up there that no one could see, but he was watching. And he swooped down, and I don't know whether it was the bride or groom's head that got taken off, but the dove's head, I mean, he hit it so hard, and feathers flew everywhere, and blood, and a head flew off, and he just swooped off and flew off. So, one thing, no one would ever forget their wedding. I mean, it really... but, you know, they were just so preoccupied with that. By the way, their marriage lasted just a little over a year. They had, you know, weddings are just an event. Marriage is a lifetime. And so that's why we got to be serious about that.